Hi there. I'm Jason McMullen.
And I'm Kate Ariano. Welcome to Words Aloud.
We love books. We love stories, poems, memoirs, narratives, and any kind of written or spoken word that moves us.
That's why we created Words Aloud, a space for us to invite writers of all kinds to share their pieces that we like.
Come get lost in words. You're with friends here.
It's Kate here today on Words Aloud with a peer, a friend, and a brilliant woman, Kat Casey. Kat, known professionally as Kat McKenna, is a University of Connecticut graduate pursuing an MFA in fiction at the University of New Hampshire, a self-proclaimed evil woman apologist, and Massachusetts native. Kat's writing forte is that of New England women and crime. And in her free time, you can find her working the front desk at the UConn Rec Center. Today, Kat will be sharing with us a piece titled Triple Dog, a tale of two teenage girls perplexed and petrified when they see their teacher appear on a breaking news segment.
The whole mess that followed could have been avoided if they had just gone to Mallory's house. But it was an odd Saturday, not an even one, which meant that they were at Amanda's house. Amanda, who had her own landline and her own television in her room, and whose mom let them order pizza and watch R-rated movies with cuss words and sex scenes and gratuitous violence that would leave them with stunted emotional response systems. At least, that's what Mallory's parents said when they asked to watch TV past 7 o'clock on her even Saturdays. She did not have her own television or her own landline, and her father would unplug the house phone after 9. He said no one decent ever called after dark. It was the third Saturday of the month when they sat on Amanda's bed, sipping Grape Fanta out of the limited edition Disney cups that her mom had gotten from Burger King. Mallory was not allowed to eat fast food at home. "I dare you," Amanda said, twirling a strand of Kool-Aid dyed hair around her index finger. "No way," Mallory cried, throw pillow clutched to her chest in place of demure pearls. "Double dog. I am not calling Stacy Callahan's older brother and asking him to rip off my clothes and take me on the floor, you perv. Mal, I'm doing this for your own good. Triple dog or you're a no-good chicken. Veto. Oh, come on. You always veto my fun ones. More like I always veto your dumb ones. Mandy, he's like 4 years older than us. If some freshman nobody called him up and said, well, what you want me to say, she'd be the laughingstock of the senior class. I wouldn't get a real boyfriend till college, at least. Not to mention the residual trauma from all the bullying I'd get. Spoil sport, Amanda said, and stuck her tongue out at Mallory from across the bed. Why do you have to turn into your mom about everything? The two girls sat across from each other, positioned so that Amanda's phone sat between them on its own special pillow. They spent most odd Saturdays worshiping at the shrine of Amanda's landline, fantasizing about Stacy Callahan's brother or Frankie Lewis or Brian, the cute student teacher in their art class, somehow getting her number and calling on a Saturday night to tell them to get ready at last minute's notice for some surprise date to the movie theater on Main Street, where everyone knew you only went to fool around in the back row. My turn. Nuh-uh. I totally get a do-over if you're going to be such a lame-ass about your dare. Mallory rolled her eyes. According to the precedent set by your refusal of the Anthony Parkinson dare, ew, Mal, he had a cold sore the size of my fist. I have the right to refuse a dare on the basis of mass humiliation and social stratification. All I hear is cluck, 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 you chicken. Amanda flopped backwards onto her bed in the way that always made Mallory worry that she would overshoot it and snap her neck as she fell onto the pink shag carpet. Mal, look at Leo. Amanda pointed to the Titanic poster that was wedged squarely between Jordan from My So-Called Life and Johnny Depp. Everybody says that Danny Callahan could pass for, like, his cousin. I'm just trying to score you a date with Leonardo DiCaprio's almost cousin, because I am a good friend and I love you. More like you're trying to get my ass handed to me by Bethany Meyer. Everyone knows they're going steady. Going steady? What is this, 1955? Just say they're going out. Jesus Christ! Amanda paused to take a sip of grape soda. She would probably kick your ass, though, she said, laughing. That bitch is like 8 feet tall. Mallory sighed and leaned back into the mountain of pillows. Looking up, she locked eyes with the poster of Devon Sawa that Amanda had taped to her ceiling directly above her bed. I dare you, Mallory said, half to Amanda and half to Devon, to put on America's Most Wanted. Mallory was yanked violently out of her moment with the brooding yet sensitive Devon Sawa when a pillow connected with her head. Hey, what gives? Mallory, that is the lamest fucking dare ever. You just want me to do it so you can watch that stupid show. That is so not true. It so was. Mallory's parents didn't allow her to watch anything that could be deemed potentially corruptible or immoral. They didn't even let her rent Pride and Prejudice from the Blockbuster in town because they heard about the scene where Colin Firth jumps into the lake. As if they'd let her watch a presentation of the nation's sickest and most twisted rapists and murderers. She had to read that whole damn book for class. While Amanda's mom not only let her rent Pride and Prejudice from Blockbuster, she bought her the video box set for that Christmas. Amanda told Mallory once that sometimes she would only watch the second tape, and she would just skip forward to the part where Colin jumps into the lake and his shirt sticks to his chest. Meanwhile, Mallory tried to tape her own poster above the bed like Amanda did with Devon, and her parents nearly had a conniption at the idea of what she'd be doing at night under the covers that would call for her to stare into the eyes of Sean Hunter. Whatever, fine, we can watch your creepy-ass show, but if it's another guy who eats people, I'm turning it off. Mallory silently cheered with raised fists as Amanda turned on the television, 32 inches, God, she was so lucky, and put on Channel 5. Happy? Ecstatic. Amanda groaned as she processed what was on the screen. It's not even the good part, it's just the lame-o hotline part where they show all the gross, ugly guys from the FBI list. She instead turned to her nails. Mallory was about to agree. This, too, was her least favorite part of the show. She opened her mouth to say as much to Amanda when her blood ran cold. Amanda. What? Look. It couldn't be. There was no possible way. It was a mistake. A fluke. Just one of those faces that looked like everyone else. Holy shit. It was a police sketch, which meant that it could be inaccurate. That's what it had to have been. There's no way it could be who Mallory thought it was. Mal, that's totally Brian. And it totally was. There he was, wanted for upwards of 13 counts of violent sexual assault and 3 possible murders, and labeled highly dangerous, do not engage, was Brian, the student teacher in their art class. Christ, the police sketch even had the scar on the right side of his mouth, the one that just last week Amanda said she'd like to trace with her tongue while Mallory shushed her. This didn't make any sense. Brian wasn't some freak or some creep who breathed too heavily or watched them with dark eyes from across the room. He was nice, handsome even. He smiled at them like they were grown-ups, not just scrawny 14-year-olds with acne and bad haircuts. On his first day, he had told them not to call him Mr. Gregory, but Brian, and they wouldn't even get in trouble for it. What do we do? Mallory was starting to hyperventilate. She wished she had her inhaler with her, but she'd stopped bringing it to sleepovers in 7th grade because it made her feel dorky. Oh, God, Mallory had just talked to Brian about her asthma during art class a couple of weeks ago. He'd know now that she was an easy target, that if he chased her, she wouldn't be able to run for too long. Oh, God, she was going to be one of those girls they found in the woods. Brian was going to corner her after school, and that would be it. Christ, what if they found her naked? Her parents would be so mad at her if she got murdered. What do you mean, what do we do? The number's right there. Call it. No way! What if it's not really him? What if we're completely wrong and we sell the wrong guy down the river? That had to be true. It had to be the wrong guy. It didn't matter that Brian was exactly 5'10", just like the description on screen, or that his sandy blonde hair covered his forehead just like in the police sketch, or that he owned the same puka shell necklace that the guy on screen was described as wearing. A lot of people wore puka shells. They were really in right now. Mal, he's got like a whole laundry list of crimes there. I'd like to think they'd double check. That also had to be true. So what if they called and reported the wrong guy? No harm, no foul. Unless Brian got fired for being suspected of murder and they ruined his life just because he looked exactly like a guy on the FBI's most wanted list. Or what if he did do it, but he outsmarted the cops and they didn't arrest him and instead he hunted down Mallory and Amanda for trying to turn him in? Still, I'm not doing it. I dare you. Amanda, cut it out. This isn't some stupid dare. This is serious. Mallory, I double-dog dare you to call that hotline right now. Mallory had started to cry, and she could feel the painful tightening of her throat as she heaved in a wheezing breath. Things always got like this with Amanda. She would push Mallory until she got scared or paranoid, and then Mallory would cry, and Amanda would call her a baby. It was these moments that would always make her wonder why they were even friends. Amanda, please, this is freaking me out. I want to go home. She couldn't go home, though, because then she'd be alone in the dark of her room without even the noise of a television to distract her from the fact that Brian was out there and he could, at any moment, sneak in through her window and grab her. At least here, in Amanda's pink-walled room, she had a 50-50 chance of not being taken. I triple-dog dare you. Mallory looked at Amanda with pleading eyes and was startled to see that she, too, had the telltale redness that indicated unshed tears. It was startling to realize that Amanda, fearless and oftentimes mean Amanda, who had never once cried in front of Mallory, not even when her parents divorced or where she broke her collarbone, was scared too. We'll do it together. Mallory lifted the corded phone with a shaky hand and carefully dialed the number on screen. Amanda joined her at the head of the bed and Mallory held the phone between the two of them, two ears at the receiver. It rang for what felt like a whole year. All Mallory could hear was the ringing of the phone, her own labored breathing, and the barely audible gnawing of Amanda's teeth on her fingernails. Then suddenly, FBI hotline. They both froze. Mallory tried to push the words out, but she trembled under the weight of her own breath. Amanda was, for once, speechless. FBI hotline, the dispatcher repeated. Please know that prank calls to this number are considered a federal offense. It's not a prank! Cried Mallory, terrified of getting in trouble more than she was scared of the reality that her teacher was a criminal. I want to report a sighting of one of the guys from the end of America's Most Wanted. Okay, and what information can you provide us? The police sketch of the blonde guy with the scar above his lip that's on the run from Tulsa? That's my art teacher. His name is Brian Gregory, and he works at Somerset High. I'm pretty sure he goes to UMass Dartmouth. He's a student teacher. Is there anything else you can tell me about him? No, he's pretty new. Look, you have to believe me that it's him. He has the scar and he fits the physical description they showed with the image. He wears the same necklace. I assure you that we investigate all reported sightings that are deemed credible. Can I have your name and number for a follow-up call if we need any further information? Mallory could feel the tears starting to spring again at the corner of her eyes. She couldn't tell them her name. Then Brian would know it was her that called and he'd find her and he'd kill her, just like he killed those three girls back in Tulsa and Kansas City and Lexington. Why do you need my name? Can't you just arrest him now? He works with children, for God's sake. Ma'am, please stay calm. It's standard procedure. Mallory took in a shaky breath, but she was interrupted by Amanda. My name is Bethany Meyer. That's Bethany with a B. All right, Miss Meyer, is there a number I can reach you at? Mallory centered her breathing as Amanda rattled off the number to her landline, the one that only Mallory had ever called before. All right, thank you, Miss Meyer. The Federal Bureau of Investigation appreciates your diligence. And the line went dead. Amanda and Mallory stared at each other as the dull beep of the disconnected call filled the silence of Amanda's room. That's it? Amanda asked. Mallory looked down at the phone and back up at Amanda, dumbfounded. I mean, we told him that the guy worked with kids. What if he kills one of us next? Amanda, please, you're freaking me out. I'm serious, Mal. What happens when we go to school on Monday and he's still there? What if he finds out we called? They looked at each other with wide, frightened eyes. Amanda was chewing her nails again, a shame because her mom had just taken her to get them done with these super cute French tips. Would they share a funeral if they died at the same time? Mallory was sure her parents would object to it, but she wondered if she kept a note in her pocket that said as much for when Brian kept them after school. Unless Amanda outran her and left her behind. Which was fair. Mallory would probably do the same. If only there was a third girl here that they both liked a little less. Someone like... Mallory cracked an uneasy smile. Well, actually, wouldn't he think that Bethany Meyer called? Amanda's face broke out into a relieved grin that showed off every pink bracket of her braces. Hey, yeah, you're totally right. We're so in the clear. Poor Bethany. What if he really did find out that Bethany called? What if he killed her next? Wouldn't that make Mallory complicit? She'd be so grounded if she was found complicit in a murder. That's what she gets for stealing your man. Amanda, Danny Callahan is not my man. I don't even have a crush on him. Oh, that's a load of bull. Every time you see him in the hallway, your face turns bright red and your eyes do that thing where you stare off into space. They do not. They do too. You practically start drooling. I do not drool. I just get distracted by the fluorescent lights bouncing off his frosted tips is all. Yeah, right. I dare you to call him right now and ask him to come protect you from Brian. That's not funny, Amanda. I double-dog dare you to call him and say, Oh, Danny, come quick. I just saw the assistant art teacher on America's Most Wanted and got so scared that all my clothes fell off. Won't you please come protect me and bring an equally cute friend to protect my gorgeous, much prettier friend, Amanda? Cut it out, Amanda. We shouldn't be joking about this. This is actually really serious. Come on. I triple dog dare you.
All right, so it is Kate sitting down here with our author of this week's episode, Kat Casey, also known as Kat McKenna, newly to be published soon. Kat is graduating from UConn. Congratulations.
Thank you. Congrats to you, too. I know you're also a rising graduate.
Yes, I am. Kat is a senior English major with, get this, a film minor and a concentration in creative writing. Kat does it all, guys.
Yeah, I fully took advantage of the humanities department at UConn.
You might as well. You've only got 4 years to do it. So you're from southeastern Massachusetts.
I am here at
UConn. And you just read Triple Dog for us, which I want to know, how do you come up with content like that?
So a lot of what I write about is related to specifically the relationship between women and crime. There's this really interesting trend in the people who consume true crime are so often women, in the same way that men are sociologically, like, we trend that men enjoy horror movies. Women also enjoy horror movies. That's a stupid blanket statement.
Not me, but I'm sure.
Not me either. Definitely not me. But in the same way that men enjoy horror movies, women enjoy true crime because it's a reality-based fear. It's like a confirmation bias. It confirms what we already are conditioned to fear every day. But I was actually, specifically with this piece, listening to a podcast. I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts, which is, I mean, fitting into the stereotype. But I was listening to an episode of Last Podcast on the Left, and they were talking about this serial killer named Rodney Alcala. And in reality, at the beginning of his crime spree, he was working at a summer camp. And two of the girls who were at this camp were at the post office, and they looked at the bulletin board, and they saw an FBI's most wanted poster, and it was their camp counselor. And I was like, wow, like, what does that conversation look like for two 14-year-old girls who see that their camp counselor is actually a murderer? Like, that is so interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And I definitely didn't take it seriously, but also, like, I am a big proponent. I like to call myself a scholar of teenage girldom, because so much of what I write is about adolescent girls, because I don't think that they get the credit to take up spaces the same way that we so often give adolescent boys, because teenage boys, like, dominate our media. There's a German term I'm going to say wrong. It's called, like, a Bildungsroman. It's basically a coming of age story. And all of them are men. but when women get them, we don't really get to do the same thing that boys get to do, which is be stupid and gross and funny. I'm a big proponent of letting women, and specifically young girls, be dumb. And not in the I'm hot and I'm dumb way, but in the, like, you're just a dumbass kind of way. It's really important to me. It's why I love media like Dairy Girls and Fleabag and things that, like, look at women and say, no, you can be stupid too.
Right.
Let women be stupid.
No, I think that the comedy in Triple Dog is so rich, and it's so something that made me feel like I was in the room with Amanda and Mallory. And I must ask, do we get to know what happens to Amanda and Mallory?
I don't think they get murdered. I do think that Brian is a serial killer. That tracks. But, the real girls who called the hotline, they weren't victimized. So I like to think that Brian was very quickly disappeared from the school roster, and Amanda and Mallory continued to have a highly toxic, codependent, obsessive friendship until they went off to different colleges and then looked back on their time together and were like, wow, that was not a good relationship for me. And maybe they connect every year, maybe go out for drinks, and they both leave it remembering why they're no longer friends. Mm-hmm. But every time they go to do it, they're like, wow, I haven't spoken to Amanda in so long. It's going to be so good to catch up. And then Mallory leaves and she's like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, and maybe Mallory get to reconnect with Danny Callahan. But no, nah, I think he lets his Leo looks go to waste. I think he stays in their town for the rest of his life.
I imagine that when Amanda and Mallory have these get togethers, like every couple years, the one thing that they have in common to talk about is just the fact that they one time turned in their student art teacher for being a murderer.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I actually like to think that Mallory will like try and bring it up and Amanda will be like, nah, I don't like talking. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about how fat Bethany Meyer looked when she posted on Facebook last week. And Mallory's like, I don't keep up with any of these.
Mallory's like,
anymore.
I don't have Facebook.
Yeah, Mallory doesn't have Facebook. She's off the grid.
I love that for Mallory.
Yeah, Mallory had a tough upbringing. Her parents are horrible. They're very strict.
A little strict. So something else I know you have been working on at your time at UConn is a novel. Is that right?
It is. For the past year, I've had an amazing experience. I reached out to Sean Forbes, who is the head of the creative writing department here. Cannot recommend classes with him enough to anybody who's listening. We have an amazing creative writing faculty at UConn that does not get enough credit. It's severely underrated, and I have enjoyed every class I've ever taken. But I've been working on a young adult novel that I started writing in Darcy Dennegan's creative writing for children and young adult class back during the pandemic semester. And I reached out to Sean afterwards and I asked if we could set up an independent study. So along with Sean and two other students, Ellen Fuller, who is also writing a young adult novel, and hers is amazing. It is so much smarter than mine. It's like actually deals with climate change and heavy topics for young people. And it's amazing and so skillfully done. And Nicole Catarino, who is the editor in chief of the Long River Review, they have been writing a poetry collection, which is also amazing. I am not a poet and I don't claim to be. And I'm so jealous of how amazing their poetry is. They are incredible. And also both of them are being published in the Long River Review. But yeah, I've been writing a young adult novel about a young man. I'm such a hypocrite.
You're not a hypocrite. I saw you like think that to say that as soon as you said a young man, you can write about anyone you want to.
But
anyone.
It's different because he's gay. But he is. It's about a young man's coming of age and self-actualization in kind of coming to terms with himself and realizing his queerness. And I've grown very attached to him. I've spent a lot of time with him and the cast of characters for that. And so I'm about halfway through with it at the moment, barring major rewrites that I'm still probably going to have to do, like going back. But it's been kind of a joy to work with Sean and Ellen and Nicole and just kind of like write. I've never gotten this far on a project like that before. It's really exciting, honestly, to be able to say, like, I have pretty much 100 pages of a young adult book at this point.
Wow.
Thank you.
Just thinking about the procrastination that you must feel like creep up on you sometimes to get a big project like this done, but
it's hard because I have ADHD, and so I have a lot of executive dysfunction, and I find that's kind of why I push myself to apply to master's programs in writing, because I feared if I didn't have the structure of the school academic environment that I wouldn't find myself still writing, which was a big fear for me. And so a lot of the time deadlines are what get me to. So for one of my last submissions, because we switch off on weeks, I had like 4 pages done and I was like, this is all I'm going to have for this week. Like, this all I have for this week. That's going to be so embarrassing. Like, oh my God. So I sat down and I wrote 17 pages in one night to like submit.
Wow.
But everyone was like, oh my God, like you finally like hit your stride. I was like, thanks. It's because it was done all in one sitting.
Sometimes though, you just get that urge that I need to make this better.
I have to sit down. I can't look at, and it's like tunnel vision. It's like, it's hyperfixation. I always said with my friends, if I ever start a podcast, it's going to be called Hate and Hyperfixation, because
nice.
All I do is hyperfixate on things. But I like sit down, I don't get up, I don't like eat, and I don't like breathe until I'm done like typing.
You're just
out
holding
my
your breath the entire time.
My notes of my phone are full of things where I'm like, I had to write this down before I forgot it. I have like post-its that I write at work all the time with like weird little phrases on them just to like, because I like, I have to write this down or I'm not going to remember it.
I totally understand that. But I want to talk about what's next for you. You'll be graduating and you're going to be published soon.
Yeah, it's just in a quick plug, Long River Review, UConn student run literary magazine. Home Cooked will be physically published in that, as well as a graphic illustrated comic piece that I wrote and drew myself. And that deals with kind of struggling to come to terms with what happens when someone close to you, who you have kind of romanticized childhood memories of, as an adult, you have to look back on them and realize what was actually going on. It's very much inspired by dealing with my aunt's death, who died of an opioid overdose when I was 15. And I was told my whole life that she died of a heart attack. And then as an adult, I was talking to my mother about it. She was like, don't be stupid. She didn't die of a heart attack. And I was like, well, that's what you said this whole time. But yeah. And so after that, I'm off to UNH, where I will be getting my MFA in fiction. And then after that, who knows?
That is awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your work with us today. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you publish in the future. And I hope our listeners are too.
Thank you so much. I had a great time. I'd come back anytime in the next 2 weeks while I'm still a student of UConn.
Awesome. Thanks, Kat.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
I'd like to thank Kat just one more time for sharing her voice with Words Aloud. Catch her in the newly published UConn Long River Review, available for purchase in September if you're interested. And thank you for catching some sound waves today on Words Aloud, stories that move you.
If you'd like to submit your work for an appearance on Words Aloud, you can send it to wordsaloudshow@gmail.com. That's wordsaloudshow@gmail.com. This show is produced with the support of WHUS Radio at the University of Connecticut.